Good afternoon to you all, and may it please the court. I'm Taryn Walsh, and with John Musser, we represent the MV Argos M and her owner, Argos Bulkers, Inc., in this appeal. So as the briefing illustrates, Argos has raised several grounds upon which we believe the district court's findings should be reversed, and largely arguing that 350 had failed to meet its burden of proof on multiple elements of its claim. So in the interest of time, I plan to start with some of the legal issues that we address in there, namely the choice of law issue, as well as the existence of a maritime lien, focusing on the fact that 350 did not meet its burden to show that U.S. law governs this dispute, and then likewise that it didn't meet its burden to establish that it acted upon the owner, a person with authority to bind the vessel.
Can I ask you about that second question first?
I'm sorry, what?
Can I ask you about the second question first?
Oh, sure.
Do you intend to dispute that there is a difference between Shimsura and AUM?
Yes, Your Honor.
The brief seems to really hammer that the charter party,
yes,
is with Shimsura, that AUM is the one that does the dealings to get the bunkers. But I'm not sure I really understand, especially after a bench trial, what to do with these documents where we have these emails that suggest that Shimsura and AUM are the same. So I'm looking in particular at 3194 of the record, which is an email from Subaya on behalf of AUM and Shimsura that seems to be going to Bunker X to say, yes, I can confirm that these deals were done with the full authority of the chartering parties as if Shimsura and AUM are the same.
Okay, yes. So we, as you suggested in our briefing, do strongly dispute that those are one and the same company. First, we believe there's a lack of evidence in the record that would establish, from a corporate perspective, that these two companies are one and the same. Shimsupa is a German company that the only party to the charter party with Argos was Shimsupa. Within there, it's recognized implicitly that they are distinct companies. As Mr. Kakridis testified, he would not have sought a guarantee from AUM if he thought that it was one and the same with Shimsupa, or if the materials he'd been provided showed it was one and the same. These are two, again, distinct corporations, with AUM based in Dubai, Shimsupa based in Germany, both separately charter vessels. Both have separate operations. There's no indication in the record of whether the companies employ the same people, how many employees each one distinctly has. There's no evidence that these are some sort of alter ego or single business enterprise. And we would submit that 350 failed to make that showing.
That's on actual authority. Would we have to reach that if we find that there is apparent authority?
Would we have to reach what? I'm sorry.
We have to reach the finding that there are one and the same if we made a finding that there was some apparent authority?
Yes. I think regardless, the separate nature of the two companies comes into the authority question. So with them being separate and distinct, and the charter party itself negating the possibility of actual authority for Shimsupa. If Shimsupa doesn't have authority to do something like bind the vessel, it can't let another agent or entity do something that it cannot do. Just as a fundamental premise of agency law, if the principal can't take an action, it can't skirt around by having an agent take that action. So the distinctness of the corporations, and again, corporate separateness, those are separate and distinct actions. On the apparent authority front, that traces into, again, the links in the chain, if you will. And so with apparent authority, the Fifth Circuit law is clear that it must be affirmatively proven. And apparent authority requires a manifestation from the principal to the third party seeking to rely on the agency relationship. That third party that's seeking to rely on the relationship also bears that burden of affirmative proof. Here, the only principal for the purpose of a maritime lien is, well, the only two possible principals for the purpose of a maritime lien are the owner of the vessel, Argos Bulkers, and the charter of the vessel, which is Shimsupa. That is not disputed. The only entity that entered into the charter for the Argos M is Shimsupa. So for apparent authority to exist under existing precedent, we need evidence of a manifestation or some conduct made by one of those two principals to 350 that 350 then reasonably relied upon at the time of the transaction in order for apparent authority to exist. So yes, Your Honor, I do think that the interplay between the two separate and distinct companies comes into play there.
Can I try to simplify some of the contractual provisions to see if I can, I want to make sure I know where the nub of this is in your view. So I know you've got the no liens provision and the charter party between Argos and Shimsupa. I got that. But let's take AUM out of it for a minute, and let's just assume that, to make it simpler, that it's Shinsupa is the one that talks to Bunker X and then talks to 350 and this Oryx supplier or whatever it is to get the bunkers. All right, so Shimsupa calls up 350 and says, I need 800 metric tons of fuel. I am the charterer. Would that be apparent authority sufficient to get a maritime lien when Shimsupa doesn't pay the debt? You see what I mean? So I really keep the contractual provision, but take AUM out of it for a minute. Let's just do it as it's purely a charterer. 350 knows it's the charterer, and the charterer says, I'm the charterer. Here's a bunch of like U.S. law that says charterers can impose maritime liens for failure to pay debts. Give me my bunkers.
Okay. So starting with one caveat there. Taking out AUM is one thing, but there's still Bunker X. So Bunker X is still an integral part of this chain. Okay. Whether it was Shimsupa or AUM, 350 never spoke with either. And I think that's, we believe, a significant point. Because with, again, any sort of apparent authority, and I feel like the presence of Bunker X is something we can't change here. You know what I mean?
Sure. And explain to me why that matters so much.
Yes, and so that's because 350 needs to show that reasonable reliance for the authority to bind the vessel. And it comes from Simla. Mm-hmm. That's where we start and end, right? So a maritime lien, which again has to be strictly construed, can only exist if the necessaries are supplied on the order of the owner or a person authorized by the owner. That's where we start. Then to get into presumptive authority, which is where a charterer and a charterer's agent come into play. So if you're looking, kind of working your way back, if you will, it's the agency relationships that trace you back to the owner of the vessel, which is the only one that at first blush has the authority to bind the vessel. And again, with the authority to bind the vessel, a distinct inquiry from an okay to buy bunkers. And the case law really reinforces this. Decisions like Bowman Bunker, Lake Charles Stevedores, Sing Fuels, and we spent a lot of time in our briefing talking about the parallels with the Fourth Circuit Sing Fuels decision. So having the okay to buy bunkers is not the same as having the authority to bind the vessel. And here, this is not a rogue bunker buyer situation. It's, you know, we're not saying that 350 acted out of turn or just sent a barge of bunkers to the Argos M. It's about the steps needed to be able to meet the authority and the agency piece for the existence of maritime lien under U.S. law.
But if Shimsupa knows, let's make Shimsupa the bad guy for the hypothetical. Okay, Shimsupa knows it has the no liens provision in its charter party with Argos, and it's like, man, that's terrible. Really makes my life hard, but gosh, I need my bunkers. So it calls to get the bunker supply, knowing it has the no lien provision, doesn't disclose it, so breaches its contract with your client, okay, that's clear, but goes out and says, I need the bunkers anyway, conceals the no lien provision, whatever, has no intention of paying the debt or whatever. Is there a lien or is there not a lien? Like, what I'm trying to really put my finger on is, what is the impact, if any, of the no liens clause that you have with Shimsura? Do you see what I'm getting at?
I do, yes. And so I think and let me know if this doesn't answer your question, but I think the impact is it negates actual authority. And so that's really what the no lien clause does. So then if you move to apparent authority, right, for these purposes, if Shimsupa had, for example, gone directly to 350. I think then you get into more of the realm in some of the OW bunker cases, and where that first OW bunker entity was found to have a lien. But this is not that situation, because we had several steps, and it's more like the second or third OW bunker entity trying to get that lien. And that's where decisions like Bowman Bunker, Valero, Singfields as well, outside of the OW realm. But that's where those come into play. So, and that also brings in the general contractor, subcontractor line. Because here, when you look at the email that I think we screenshotted in the reply brief, that it said it's the email from Mr. Subia, and says that AUM charges them a percentage for the service it provides them for providing bunkers. That's the general contractor. Like in Bowman Bunkers, the charter of Shimsupa turned to AUM to procure bunkers for the vessel. AUM turned to Bunker X. Bunker X turned to 350. And Bunker X really kind of spread the wings a little further, got in touch with Ducat Marine, Maritime, and Sing Fuels on the supply side. So that's how we get to the distinction.
But all of the things that you're talking about, I want to bring you back to where you started, which is you wanted to talk about choice of law. And I take everything you're saying to be provisions of CIMLA and our applications or federal court applications, the Fourth Circuit's, the Fifth Circuit's applications of U.S. law. Is that right?
Yes.
So to help me understand, that it sounds like you're not making a choice of law argument because it sounds like you're agreeing that United States law applies. Help me. I knew you were going to say no. help me understand the no now.
Yes, sorry. To go backward, with the application of U.S. law, as is undisputed, pretty much, no part of this transaction touched the United States. And so the only way that you get to a U.S. choice of law is through 350's general terms and conditions. Importantly, there is no choice of law clause on the face of the bunker contract. The only way U.S. law comes into play is through incorporation of 350's general terms. So we believe the district court erred in failing to conduct the bulk Juliana-style analysis, which requires first determining the law of contract formation using the Lauritzen factors adapted for the contract arena, and then, once deciding the law of contract formation, deciding whether the choice of law term was validly incorporated into that bunker contract.
And do you have a view about how that comes out?
In general, yes.
Like, what would be the correct law to choose?
So we believe that when you run through the factors, U.S. law is not the law of contract formation. That's our first conclusion. From there, we believe that when you weigh the factors and take a look at each one with, again, the undisputed facts, and Mr. Loveman testified to many of these as well. I think it was around this page 60s of the trial transcript. But we believe Greek law would come to the forefront there. And then it was incumbent upon 350 to prove the application of U.S. law as a part of its claim. Its verified complaint brought this action under U.S. law, referenced CIMLA in the complaint. And so it was 350's burden to establish that its U.S. choice of law clause was validly incorporated into its bunker contract. And here, we believe they did not do so.
Excellent.
Any other questions at the moment?
You've saved time for rebuttal.
I will do that.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will hear next from Mr. Bennett on behalf of 350 Markets.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is William Bennett from the firm of Blank Rome. With me today is Chauvin Keene from the law firm of Keene Miller, and we represent 350 Markets Limited. I will be brief because we believe the determinative issue before the court is very narrow. To prevail in its appeal, appellants must establish that Judge Fallon, a judge with decades of experience in maritime matters, was clearly erroneous when he held that AUM was authorized by Shimsupa to order the bunkers for the Argos M. There is no dispute that if AUM was authorized to order the bunkers, that Judge Fallon correctly applied the law on maritime liens.
And what is the law on maritime liens? Which law are you referring to?
So first off, let's start with a critical error by defendants, and that is the privity of contract argument. Judge Fallon, in his opinion, clearly wrote that this court, the Fifth Circuit, has routinely held, and this was in Valero Marketing, 893 F3rd at 290, that it is common for fuel suppliers to not be in privity with vessel owners. And why is that? Because they deal with brokers, and brokers like to get their commission. So when we get to the findings of Judge Fallon, trial court, he had in his record my dispositive motion, my colleague's dispositive motion, and a trial where we presented evidence, defendants did not. We brought over Mr. Loveman, who testified. Judge Fallon found him to be credible. And what did he establish? He established, through credible evidence, including his own testimony, that the charterer, and there is no dispute here, that Shim Super, under the charter, was authorized to order bunkers for the Argos M.
And was also, I assume there's also no dispute, that Shim Super was absolutely, positively, 1,000 ways to Sunday, obligated to disclose the no liens provision.
Yes.
So Shim Super obviously didn't do that.
Didn't do it.
So they were
Argos, and to be fair, and not to say, hey, Shim Super did something that was wrong, the owner of the vessel and its manager, Pontos, through Mr. Krikides, received emails before the bunkers were supplied. So he knew that 350 Markets was going to be a supplier. He could have contacted them and say, by the way, there's no lien clause.
Is there some legal obligation to contact 350 Markets and say no liens on behalf?
There's no legal obligation, but your no lien clause is invalid if 350 Markets has no notice of it.
Says,
it doesn't matter.
Says who?
Says the law.
And my question is that what I asked you at the beginning, can you be more specific? What is the law? What is the source of law that you're referring to? You're referring to SIMLA, a Fifth Circuit case, some general maritime?
Yeah, it's a Fifth Circuit.
Application of United States law?
Yes, of course.
Great. So my question is, why does the United States law apply?
Once Judge Fallon determines that AUM was authorized to order the bunkers, and he does so by citing exhibits 3, 15, 18, 20 in the testimony. Once he establishes that, then the next step is, okay, what was received by AUM and the brokers? And that is the order confirmation, including 350's Markets terms and conditions.
Well, obviously it doesn't include the terms and conditions. It just says available on request, and so it doesn't actually include them.
But no, I think there was a finding by the judge that the second email that went to Mr. Krikides, Pontos and Argos, that they were attached. That was a finding by Judge Fallon. The original email with the order confirmation by us to AUM, Shim Super, and their operator was the information. It appears the next email that went from AUM, Shim Super, and its operator to Mr. Krikides at Pontos and Argos included the general terms and conditions, which means that they, on their own, downloaded the terms and conditions to provide them to the owner. That's what it appears in Judge, in his decision.
So you're saying AUM found them on their own?
Yeah, AUM, it appears that there was an attachment to that email, and that went to Argos M and the owners of Mr. Pontos.
What I'm asking is, why would United States law apply prior to the contract between AUM and your client?
Without the terms and conditions, that establish that U.S. law should apply.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you that then you would get into the Lauritzen factors.
Because there's a huge problem, it strikes me, and help me work through it.
Huge problem with what?
Before that contract is entered between AUM and your client,
yeah,
the only rules that exist in this case, relevant rules that exist in this case, are a contract that say you, Shimsupa, this is from Argos to its charterer in the charter party, you must supply the bunkers, and you cannot do anything directly or indirectly that is going to result in a lien on my boat. That's what the contract says. There's no mention of U.S. law. There is no mention whatsoever of choice of law or anything about, right? And so you need some source of law that is going to kick that out, right? And I'm not sure I'm understanding where you're going to find it.
Respectfully, I think you're incorrect.
Sure. Explain why.
I think Argos M may have a breach of contract claim with Shimsupa. I had a no lien clause. I directed you not to have a lien, and you failed to do that. That's different than my client, who is entitled because he provided necessaries to a lien. I was never told that I can't have a lien on the vessel, and every case that's in the United States that deals with bunker claims, I can guarantee you that the charter party has a no lien clause.
So here's what I don't understand. Every case that I've seen applying U.S. law, because I don't think I'm going to get a good answer on why U.S. law applies before the choice of law provision that's in your contract, because I don't think there is a good one. So let's just skip past that for a minute. But all of the cases say that the charterer is presumed to have authority to bind the vessel for maritime liens, right?
Correct.
So what is the boat owner, the vessel owner, Argos, supposed to do to prevent maritime liens against its boat? How does it rebut the presumption that its charter part, that its charterer pursuant to the charter party?
So here, let's start with the fact that Shimsupa was given the authority to order bunkers, right? So if they're gonna order bunkers, Argos M knows there's gonna be some sort of lien on the vessel, right? We gotta start with that, but let's start with that. What the owner is trying to prevent with the no lien clause is for those costs and expenses which are outside the normal course of operating a ship. So if I happen to have a massive breakdown of an engine, I as owner want to make sure that I choose my dry dock, I choose my maintenance people. I don't want you choosing that. What are they supposed to do is when they learn of a supplier of goods or necessaries, is to get on the phone and say, by the way, I have a no lien clause. Here's my charter party. They had that opportunity to do that. Pontos Marine, the manager of the vessel, received notice before the bunkers were supplied that 350 was going to supply bunkers.
And what law required him to pick up the... So he's entered a contract, right?
With Shimsupa, yep.
And what law requires him to then pick up the phone when Shimsupa's ordering bunkers and say, by the way, this person is out operating my boat, but you should know that I have a contract here that says no liens on my boat.
Yeah. It's well-established Fifth Circuit law. It's actually the law of the land. It's Triton out of the Fourth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit. You need proper notice. So the cases are for no liens.
Are these all provisions? I'll save you the obligation of reading them if you can just tell me they're all applying U.S. law.
All apply U.S. law. That's from Triton.
My question is, if we follow what your friend on the other side says, that Greek law should apply, does the result change?
It does not.
And what is the authority for that?
We come right back here.
And what's the authority for that?
We come right back here.
And what is the authority for that?
So if you go to, there is a case out of the Fourth Circuit called Flame versus Freight Bulk. Neither party has cited it. It was a case decided by Judge Dumas. It involved a lien on a vessel. And in there, the key point of why, even if you do the Lauritzen analysis, why U.S. law applies was the vessel was there. It was the only factor that tied that vessel to the U.S. was the res was in the United States. And in there, he also discussed the contacts with Greek law. And we have it in our brief that Greek law would not have altered this case because it would have incorporated, Greek law would have held that that the terms and conditions were validly incorporated into the bunker confirmation, and therefore you'd use the choice of law, of U.S. law.
And none of this is discussed in the briefs? And none of this was discussed by the...
No, it's discussed. It's discussed in the record below. It's discussed in our brief. I'm just offering the answering the question specifically. We addressed the Greek law question that it wouldn't change, but the freight bulk case was not cited in the brief. If you want another case, it's called Flame versus Freight Bulk, out of the Fourth Circuit. So again, if we go back to the trial, the bench trial, there is no dispute that Shimsupa had the authority to order bunkers. And there's no dispute that AUM guaranteed Shimsupa's charter party obligations. There's no dispute that Shimsupa has confirmed that AUM had authority to bind the vessel and to order the bunkers. And there's there is nothing in the brief by appellant which would establish that Judge Fallon was clearly erroneous when he held that the terms and conditions of 350 were incorporated into the bunker confirmation. None of that. And as a result, U.S. law applied and plaintiff established under SIMLA its right to a maritime lien. We're not talking about disputes of law here or failing to apply the law. This case is about the facts and the findings of fact. And even if the panel disagrees with Judge Fallon, you still have to find that he was clearly erroneous. He was not. And we ask that the decision of Judge Fallon be affirmed.
Thank you, Counsel. Ms. Walsh, you have 5 minutes.
You ended your last argument by saying that Greek law would apply. Can you tell me now if you agree with the other side as to whether or not the result would change, and if it would change, then how?
Sure, Your Honor. I disagree with my friend on the other side here. We do believe Greek law would change the result for two reasons. So first, from the incorporation of terms aspect, Greek law, based on, I believe it's one of the Fourth Circuit decisions cited in the briefing as well, has some requirements as to the steps that are the things that had to happen in order for terms to be incorporated. If memory serves, one of them is proof of receipt of the terms before the occurrence. Before the bunkers are supplied. And we touch on that in our reply brief, that there's no evidence that these terms and conditions, first of all, were ever attached to any email, to AUM or to Shimsupa or to the vessel or to Argos Bulkers. There's also no evidence that the order confirmation that obliquely referenced the terms was sent before the bunkers were delivered. So based on the emails that had been in the record, the bunkers were delivered around 1900 hours in Spain. Tenant's email forwarding the official confirmation, sorry, I didn't mean to use air quotes, the official confirmation to AUM, again, only to AUM, not to Shimsupa, didn't happen until 1919 hours. So there was no opportunity to receive, review, and possibly object to 350's terms and conditions. So on that basis, we don't believe that Greek law would permit incorporation in the first place. And so then if incorporation is not allowed and Greek law were to govern the dispute, it's the Vestoil case, the site is at note 51 of our brief, that recognizes that Greek law does not recognize maritime liens. So we would be in a different situation on both fronts. Maybe jumping around just a little bit, the email, Judge Oldham, that you referenced early on, those emails actually came from Bijunaire at Aum. And so they didn't come from Mr. Subia's email address. There's never been any evidence that Mr. Bijunaire had any connection to Shimsupa. Only Om. He's the one who signed the Know Your Client form on behalf of AUM. He's the one who is listed as AUM's managing director. His name is only ever associated with AUM. And similarly, that in that Know Your Client form, we see that Mr. Subia was not the founding member. We see that he was not the majority shareholder, further underscoring that these are two separate and distinct companies. Additionally, moving to a different email, the emails concerning the order confirmation and when the vessel's managers may have known about it, there was no indication in there that the bunkers were financed. So to the extent that 350 presses the idea that a vessel owner has some sort of affirmative obligation to reach out to a bunker supplier, there was nothing in the content of that email that would have raised an issue on that front. And then, just lastly, one more point on the authority issue. To get into presumptive authority, which is the basis of Judge Fallon's decision, he would have had to necessarily find an agency relationship first. And that premise is reiterated in several of the cases that we've cited and that I've mentioned today. But you cannot get into the realm of presumptive authority unless that agency relationship is proven, absent being the owner of the charter. So because that foundation was the foundation for that presumptive authority finding was legally incorrect, we submit that the entire issue is subject to de novo review.
Counsel, does the choice of law question impact the presumptive authority question? That is there some reason to think that Greek law or some other non-U.S. law would have a different answer as to whether Shimsupa, could bind the principal? Does that make sense? Do you understand my question?
It does, yes. And I'm a little hesitant just because, I guess, since Greek law doesn't recognize maritime liens, I'm not sure we'd have a direct analog there with the binding the vessel part or for necessaries. But honestly, Your Honor, I'm not aware one way or the other as to agency principles of Greek law.
Anything else? The case is, and that will conclude the court. So the court will stand in recess until 1 p.m. Tomorrow afternoon.